Hey you guys, welcome back to Tomes of Terror. This is my book review series. So here's another book that I just randomly picked in my Kindle Unlimited recommendations just because I thought the cover looked interesting and the title sounded kind of intriguing. So this is a book by an author named Daniel J. Volpe. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. If I'm not, I apologize. Now I had actually heard his name before somewhere, I can't really remember where, but I didn't really know much about him, like as a writer, and had never read any of his prior works. So I kind of looked a little bit into his background, and it seems that he's mostly known for doing kind of like extreme horror or splatterpunk type stuff. And I will say that while the novel that I'm talking about today, which is called Left to You, and it came out in 2021, it actually is very gory and like very stomach churning in places. I don't think I would necessarily categorize it as extreme horror, so there's that. And I will say too that it's actually a really heart-wrenching story, which is kind of centered around a real-life historical horror, as well as a kind of really savage examination of what some people will do in order to save their own skins or save people that they love. Now, as with most books that I discuss on this series, I'm going to recommend going into Left to You, knowing as little as possible about it, because that's what I did, and I really liked not knowing anything about it, like not knowing what direction it was going to go. I had no idea what the story was about. Literally, I didn't even read the synopsis on this one. I just like was like, oh, that looks like a cool cover, and it's like, that title sounds kind of interesting, done. So I like checked it out and started reading it. Because I'm going to be talking about certain plot points. I'm not going to spoil the end or anything like that, but I am going to be talking about certain plot points that you might not want revealed prior to reading it. So there will be kind of mild spoilers from this point forward. As I said, if you have Kindle Unlimited, you can go on there and read it for free, and I actually would recommend it because I liked it very much. So the novel is actually divided into several sections. Now, the first of these follows kind of like a young, I think he's like 21, 22, something, man, he's just out of college or whatever, and his name is Robert, and he lives with his mom in upstate New York. Now, Robert is portrayed as just like a really, really decent dude, right? He's working hard at kind of two thankless jobs. He stocks shelves at a, you know, like an L Mart, you know, like a Walmart or Kmart type situation. And he also waits tables at like a Greasy Spoon type diner. And he's trying to kind of support his household. His mom is slowly dying of cancer. And it's really kind of like tearing him up inside to see like this formerly vibrant woman who is just wasting away and in constant pain. So there is, he does have like a home health aide named Esther who comes in because Robert has to work so much to, you know, kind of keep the lights on and everything like that. But, you know, the bills are still piling up. You know, he doesn't, you know, his mom got cancer. He couldn't really finish college and blah, blah, blah. So it's like he's just working all that he can work. So, you know, bills are piling up. And Robert knows that after his mother inevitably passes away, which seems like it's going to be soon, he's not going to be able to afford to keep the house. So he's kind of in a little bit of a pickle. So aside from that, though, I mean, his life, like most other people's lives, is kind of just full of petty little joys and annoyances and things like that. His biggest problem, other than his mom dying, is, you know, he has this manager at L-Mart who's kind of like named Mike, who's kind of a pain in the ass. But then he also has this friend at work, a potential love interest, maybe. She's named Sarah. She also works at L-Mart. And she actually has a big crush on him, but he's kind of been keeping her at arm's length. He's like, look, I really don't need that on top of everything else right now. But he's like, you know, maybe later on down the line because he does really like her. So, you know, it's just there little things like that that are going on. Most significantly, though, Robert has this sort of casual friendship with this very kind older gentleman named Joseph. Now, he actually just kind of met him at random. The old guy was like shopping in the L Mart one day, and he kind of like helped him out, like getting him some stuff from the back. And, you know, the guy lives in the neighborhood, so he sees him in the store all the time. And so he just kind of started talking to him. So like I said, they just struck up kind of, like, I don't even know if they'd call it a friendship, but they're just kind of acquaintances, and they always kind of like talk and hang out. They seem to like really like each other. Also, Joseph, well, sometimes he's actually like a Polish immigrant. And so the Greasy Spoon, the diner where Robert works, also like the cook there, does like a really good like Polish stuffed cabbage, and like Joseph will come in sometimes and have that. So it's like then they can talk. So like I said, it's just kind of this little friendship. And the guy's clearly, you know, I think it's implied that he's like in his 70s or 80s. So he's quite elderly. But lately, though, Joseph, the older guy, has been feeling particularly dire. He's really having some... if you're real sensitive about reading about like diarrhea and stuff, yeah, you might want to skip some of these pages. It's pretty gross. But I mean, it's reality, but it's still pretty gross. Now, although Robert doesn't know this, Joseph's body is also being ravaged by cancer, and Joseph is very, very aware that his remaining time on Earth is growing short. So he's starting to get sicker. And he starts getting, like, increasingly desperate to stay alive for just a little bit longer because he has to tell Robert something really, really important. And, you know, so he has to, like, hang around long enough to do that. Now, to this end, there's a really upsetting scene, like, that happens right here where Joseph, you kind of know where it's going because he's like, just a few more days. I have to stay alive a few more days so I can tell him this important thing. And then in the next scene, Joseph is going to the Humane Society and adopts like an older, I think it's a golden retriever, like a really nice dog named Molly, very trusting, very sweet. And, you know, the lady at the Humane Society is just like, oh, it's so nice that you're adopting like an older dog. We can't usually, you know, usually the puppies go quicker and everything like that. And you just know something bad is going to happen to this poor, poor girl. And indeed it does. So you guys know how I feel about bad shit happening to animals and stories like this. And this one, even though a lot of it is quote unquote off screen, I think like even just like the lead up to it, this like legitimately like made me like almost want to cry. So it's just kind of like, just know that going in that there is a scene like that in there. So it was very, very upsetting. So the next day, Joseph, who is looking and feeling a bit better, he actually contacts Robert and says, hey, can you come over to my house for a chat? Now, Joseph somehow already knows that Robert won't have to work that day. He is, like, scheduled, but apparently what happens, as it turns out, there's, like, some kind of plumbing problem or electrical problem or something like that, like, at the diner, and so they can't open because they have to have the guy come, you know, fix it. So he's like, yeah, you know, I had a shift today, but some bad shit happened. They can't open the diner, so, you know, yeah, I got time to kill, so I'll come over and hang out with you. So he shows up at Joseph's house. Joseph pours them both some bourbon, telling Robert, yeah, we're both going to need this by the end of the night. And then he starts to tell Robert a story. So the next section of the book actually takes place in 1943. Joseph, his wife Ola, and their twin sons have actually been rounded up by the Nazis in Poland and are being transferred to Auschwitz. The family is, of course, as soon as they get off the train, they are separated, and Joseph actually never sees his wife or children again and doesn't find out until much later, like, what happened to them. So he's basically put on a work detail, and his job entails, like, removing the dead bodies from the gas chambers and then basically, like, hosing the chambers out for the next set of victims. So obviously he and his fellow inmates are starving and terrified and, you know, this is just like the fucking worst shit ever, but they soon learn to kind of buckle down and work without complaint because they see like some of the other prisoners obviously just getting lined up against the wall and shot, you know, and the Nazis just like shooting them for just the smallest infraction. Not too long into Joseph's confinement though, the director of the camp, whose name is Lieutenant Kolmer, he learns that Joseph is a professor of theology, and he summons him to his office for a talk about religious topics. Now, Joseph obviously is initially very wary of this, especially after Kolmer pretty much tells him point blank, yeah, once you're, you know, once you bore me or once you're no longer of use to me or you're no longer interesting, then I'm going to kill you. Like, I don't like you or anything like that. So he does tell him that, like, right from the jump. But over the next few months, like, he keeps calling Joseph out, like, on his lunch period, and he just goes in there and, like, sits with him for all this time. And after a while, like, Joseph almost starts to, like, enjoy his lunchtime chats with this evil motherfucker, like, the camp commander. Colmer actually starts doling out little favors, you know, like he allows him to have fresh cold water to drink instead of, you know, the warm polluted water that they're giving to the other inmates. And after a time, Colmer even starts having kind of like really nice, rich, like lavish meals, like lunches brought for both of them to eat while they're just while they're talking. So Joseph is not only being fed and being treated much better than anyone else at the camp, like he even gets slightly nicer clothes and things like that, but he's kind of like legitimately happy to be using his intellect once again, even in this horrible place, you know, where there's really no hope or anything like that. He's like, well, at least it's something to look forward to. Now, although he does obviously despise Colmer, he does have to admit to himself that the man seems to know a great deal about theological matters and asks really informed questions and has like really good insights about some things. So the other prisoners, though, start to become really resentful that Joseph not only gets a break from this grueling work schedule, but he's also getting access to much better and more plentiful food than, you know, what they're getting, which is basically just like a stale crust of bread and like some thin soup. So his former friends or like acquaintances in the camp that had kind of like watched each other's backs and stuff, they all kind of like turn on him, essentially, you know, calling him names like he's the pet Jew and all this other kind of stuff. And basically like insinuating that he's allowing Colmer to like have sex with him in exchange for more food and water and stuff like that. So this very tense situation actually ends up culminating in a pretty horrific scene, which I won't spoil, but suffice it to say that Joseph, during the course of this ordeal, comes to realize the depths that he will sink to, I guess, in order to save his own skin, like how strong his survival instinct is and what he'll do to for self-preservation. Now, subsequently, not too long after, the camp is liberated by the Soviets, and Joseph eventually makes his way to New York City. So then the next section of the book follows Joseph there in the 1950s. I think it's like the mid to late 1950s. I can't quite remember. And he's living a modest life in Yonkers. He's teaching theology and things like that at a local college. And he lives alone in a small apartment, but it's like it's a nice place. Like, it's a decent neighborhood. One day, though, when he's in Manhattan for a school meeting, he happens to spot a very familiar face, a guy running an antique shop. It's Lieutenant Colmer, his nemesis from back in the war. So seeing him brings back all these horrible memories. I mean, he still has, obviously, like, PTSD. Like, he has a hard time running the subway, for example, because it keeps reminding him of, like, the train journey, like, going there and things like that. You know, and it brings back all these kind of horrible memories. So seeing him again, just he's gripped by this horrible, like, murderous rage. And he's also found out, like, in the ensuing years that not only, obviously, was his wife, like, you know, raped multiple times and killed at the camp, but also his twin sons were experimented on by Dr. Mengele. So he finds out that. So obviously he's very, very angry at this whole situation. So he decides that he is going to kill Lieutenant Colmer. And one night he goes to Colmer's place to do exactly that. However, before Joseph can carry out his righteous vengeance, Colmer shows him something that sort of changes the entire course of Joseph's life. Basically, Colmer says to him, "Why do you think I kept you alive and asked you all of those questions, particularly about angels and demons?" Then he ends up revealing to Joseph that through his occult studies and through, like, something that he found, like, that they confiscated from, you know, the house of some, like, some people that they had killed, he's like, "I have captured a demon, and it will do my bidding, provided that you make the appropriate sacrifices to it." So from that point forward, various circumstances conspire to get possession of the stone that houses the demon and the book that kind of tells you how to summon him and how to send him back and stuff like that. Joseph gets hold of those. And then we skip back ahead to the present day, which I think is 2019, where Joseph finally discloses that he's planning to leave the demon in Robert's care. Like, he's passing the demon on to him, since he's like, "I don't know anyone else, and I don't really want to leave it, you know, to some random person that doesn't know what it is or doesn't know how to use it, because I'm afraid it'll be, like, unleashed on the world, and I can't, like, live with that responsibility." Now, Robert, of course, doesn't believe him at first, but then when he actually shows him, like, the whole setup, and it's like he actually sees the demon and everything like that, he's like, holy shit, you know, I don't really want this or anything. But then he realizes that through sacrificing animals and people to the demon will give you whatever you ask for. So at this point, he has to decide whether what he wants, and the main thing that he wants is, you know, keeping his mother from suffering and dying, is that going to be worth the price that he is inevitably going to have to pay? So I gotta say, this was a very gripping and very emotional novel, just not just because of the dog, but I mean, it's just, yeah, this one was really like a rough one. But I'm actually like glad that I didn't have any idea what it was about, like, before I started reading it, because every new twist and turn was a surprise. I absolutely did not expect the story to go in, like, the Holocaust direction, you know, so I thought that was really, like, surprising. I was like, oh, we're doing that, okay, all right, this is like that, and it ended up being that that part of the book was, even though it was absolutely, like, a fucking harrowing, horrifying thing to read, but it kept me locked onto the page, like, all the way through, like, as every fresh atrocity unfolded, everything, because it's horrible, horrible. And like I said, it's realistic. It's like written about like realistic shit that happened there. But it's just like reading about it, like the way he writes about it is just like really visceral, and it just kind of makes you, I don't know, he just conveys like what it would have been like to be there. Like it's just very, you can almost like smell it and feel it, and it's just like it's a horrifying like thing to read about. I have to say too that this is also a very like heartbreaking story, because both of the men at the center of it, both Joseph and Robert, you know, the old guy and the young guy, they were clearly very good, decent people, but the circumstances that they endured sort of ended up putting them both in a position where they were willing to do really appalling things in order to either survive, like save their own ass, or to free their loved ones from pain or death. So it was kind of one of those stories that definitely made you wonder what you actually would do if you were put into that position. Like, would you do the same thing that these guys have done? And clearly you can like understand why somebody would be tempted to do the things that they did in this story. Now, the book, as I mentioned earlier, is quite graphic and gory in places, and as I mentioned, there is at least one animal sacrifice, but aside from all of the blood and shit and bile and fluids and everything like that that goes on in this, because the demon and everything like this is pretty gross, you know, it's very moist, there's lots of fluids, like I said, but really, like, the true horror of the story comes not from that, it mostly comes from this retelling of this sort of, you know, the monstrous cruelties that were mostly inflicted on Joseph and his fellow prisoners, and also how their desperation in those circumstances caused them to sort of lose their humanity, like by small degrees, like in, you know, small increments. Robert's story, which is kind of like the frame story, I guess, was obviously like far less tragic and less epic in scale, but it was also really emotionally affecting in its own way, because it was something, I guess, because the horrors that he was experiencing were lesser, it was more relatable, because it's like, you know, pretty much everybody can relate to, you know, having a loved one die or like get sick and see them declining, or like, you know, having a shitty job and having to put up with that kind of stuff. So it wasn't like, you know, having to deal with the Holocaust, unless you were there, you know, the horrors of it, it's kind of like too much, I think, for most people to wrap their minds around if they didn't experience it. Whereas, you know, Robert's story was a lot more relatable. Like I said, everybody can relate to the stuff that he was going through as well, even though obviously it wasn't like a small, tiny percentage of like what Joseph went through in the story. And I will say too, and I'm not going to spoil the ending, but the ending of this was a pretty pitiless twist that I didn't really see coming, I have to admit. So there's that. So, I mean, if you like your horror kind of like real nasty and savage with kind of an emotional core that makes you feel like you got punched in the gut, then this should absolutely be on your wavelength. From what I could determine, this novel particularly isn't as extreme as some of Daniel Volpe's other works, but it's still pretty brutal and gross. Although this one would probably appeal more to like a wider audience maybe than his more splatterpunk titles, because it is gross and has some extreme elements, but it's not like all that, you know what I mean? I particularly recommend it if you you like historical horror, particularly stuff, because like half of it is set during World War II, like, so if you like that kind of stuff, then you might dig this as well. But I think that if you're a fan of modern horror, because I'm more of a fan of modern horror than historical horror, although I like all kinds, then you should probably dig it as well, because I really liked this a lot, even though I'm not going to lie, it was very difficult to read. It's not like a fun read necessarily, so I don't even know if I'd call it fun or entertaining, but it was like really, really compelling. So if that sounds like something that you would like, then I would definitely recommend it. So that will do it for this Tomes of Terror. I will see you guys again on the next one. Bye.